सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ The sixth verse, which is, the sixth chapter, which is on meditation. We have seen that up to chapter five, through Karma Yoga, the mind had been quietened. That was the instruction that was given, and indicating to us that meditation can only begin when the mind is quietened to a certain extent. And so Bhagwan starts off his teaching in chapter six by saying that the one who has given up attachment to the result of action, karma, anashita, karma phalam karma. So anashita, without taking the support of the result of action, the one who is doing actions, him I consider a sannyasi, over and above the one who has actually only physically given up the fires. Physically giving up fires means physically giving up all work, means actually adorning orange clothes and then giving up everything. But in the mind, there still are desires and attachment to karma phala. Instead of that, he may be a householder even. As long as in his mind the attachment to karma phala, to the results of action, is not there, I would consider him as a sannyasi. I'm willing to consider him as a sannyasi. This verse is not to tell us that, you know, householders are any greater than the sannyasis, but to encourage the household, because this teaching is being given to Arjun, who is a householder, and he has got many, many desires in his mind. So it is an encouragement to Arjun and to us that don't worry, even if you're a householder, you must not think that, I've got a family and this and that, how can I do all this studying or Vedanta or anything, or studying for the higher? No, you can. And the way to, because it requires a quietened mind, the only thing we are asking you is, don't have that much attachment to the results of action. Do action, but give up the attachment to the results. So it's an encouragement to the householders, telling the householders that we also have a chance. Okay, so he says, O Pandava, please know yoga to be that which they call renunciation. But what a sort of, not a physical renunciation, but a mental renunciation. So he says, yoga is that which is a mental renunciation. No one verily becomes a yogi who has not renounced thoughts. Thoughts means desires. Because thoughts can directly never be, given up, because mind is a flow of thought. But what is meant here is desire, and most for householders, okay, there will be desires, but the results, attachment to the result of that desire. Suppose if the desire does not get fulfilled, the person should not get upset. That is the basic bottom line there. And so he says, the one who is Aru Rukshor Munir Yogam, the one who is trying to climb the steed of the mind, trying to climb the steed of the mind means trying to control the mind, for him, Karma Yoga is prescribed. And that's where we fall, because we are trying to yet still control the mind. And so for us, Karma Yoga is prescribed. And the reason for Karma Yoga is to quieten the mind. All right. So, and yoga rudasya tasya kshama karanam uchyate shama. So the one who thinks that he has already quietened the mind, then for him, withdrawal is now the next step. That is what it is. Okay. So he gives the example of climbing a horse, because it's very difficult to tame the horse, climb it for the first time. And so, and the mind is also very, very difficult. Later on in the same chapter, Arjun will say that the mind is like wild horses. So the mind is also very, very difficult to conquer. And the one who is trying to do it and must try to do it, if one wants to be on the spiritual path, that is the first requirement, is to control the mind. And for that, Karma Yoga is required. But if you think that you've controlled the mind already, then now you need to start withdrawing. karma sarva sankalpa sannyasi yogaru. So who is a yogarudha? The one who has given up all sankalpas. I told you sankalpa is fanciful thinking. Samyak kalpana, fanciful thinking, fanciful imagination, fanciful projections in the future. And that is what is making us act. Because I have this fanciful imagination that there is happiness in the world, and that is the reason that I'm going after the world. Why would I go after the world? If I knew that the world was full of sorrow, I would never go after it. But I have projected this idea of happiness, of reality on the world, and now I'm trying to get it. And so he says, whether man is not attached to sense objects or to actions, having renounced, then he is said to have attained to yoga. So the one who is a yogi is a sarva sankalpa sannyasi. Sarva sankalpa, that means he has renounced his sankalpas. That needs don't fall under it, okay? It is not a sankalpa to say that I'm hungry and I want to eat, I need clothes, I need shelter, I need a job. That is not sankalpa. Sankalpa is this imagination that this is going to give me happiness. That is what sankalpa is. Okay, and then how should one lift oneself? He says, you have to lift yourself by yourself. So I explained to you at that time also what we are talking about is the higher mind and the lower mind, or you can say intellect and the mind. And because there is nobody else to lift us, it is the teacher can tell us. We think, oh, teacher will lift us. No, that's why Gurudev has said, I'm not a mule guru. I cannot carry you. Teacher can guide us, but to follow that guidance is up to us. And no matter how much guidance is given, if I'm not going to follow the rules, I'm not going to get the results. So that's why Bhagwan says that lift yourself by yourself. Do not fall. Mind is your friend and mind itself is your enemy. So how come it is friend and enemy both at the same time? It is your friend if it is listening to you, if it is under your control, and if it is under the control of the intellect. So your control means, what do we mean? If it is listening to what the intellect is telling, because the intellect is always telling the correct thing. Please understand that the intellect never tells us anything wrong. It is the mind that tells us, nah, it's okay, you know, fine, you know, you can do this or that. So the mind is trying to escape or trying to be like a truant child, not listening to what the intellect is saying. So if we can have the mind listen to the intellect, there will be no friction, and then there'll be a friend. Otherwise, the enemy is one who troubles us. See, that is why the word friend and enemy. Friend is the one who in whose company will be peaceful. We will not be agitated. But in the company of a person who we think is our enemy, we'll be agitated. So the mind, when it is at loggerheads with the intellect, there will be friction. And there'll be guilt. Oh, I shouldn't have done it. And most of us do feel that. But then we just sort of push the guilt away and we say, oh, it's okay. You know, whatever, right? So that's why the mind has to be made your friend. That's why it said tame the mind. If you try to fight with it, it is not going to work. Then in 6, 7, and 8, seven, eight, and nine, he talks about detachment to various things. But here he says the self is the friend of the self for whom who has conquered himself by the self. Means the self, the pure consciousness, becomes a friend if we have conquered the mind. Why? Because the mind is what is standing in between us and the pure self. It is the ego which is standing in between. If we control the mind, if we control the ego, then what will come to surface is the pure consciousness. Because understand that the mind is nothing but the pure consciousness. So when the agitations in the mind cease, stop, what remains is pure consciousness. It is only because of the agitations in the mind that we cannot experience the pure consciousness, which is actually there. It is always there. It is not gone anywhere. It is not going anywhere. But we can't experience it because there is too much agitation in our own mind. Then how do I reduce this agitation? He gives three methods. One is shitoshna sukhadukheshu. So being equanimous in heat and cold, so at the level of the body. And then the yogi said with knowledge and wisdom. So who remains unshaken, to whom a lump of earth, stone, and gold are the same. So to objects. what he's talking about is objects. First is heat and cold, so the external situations which are affecting the body. We get affected, it's too hot, it's too cold, etc., etc. Already in Vancouver, there is the talk has started that this winter is going to be even more severe than the last winter. So that's what it is. So, but if we remain equanimous, and then also if we consider this earth and gold and stone as some. Now, I explained to you when I explained this verse that not that same means the value of each one is to be recognized according to its actual value. That is what this summers. Gold can never be equated to earth. Gold is gold and earth is earth. But we have to understand that when I have to build a house, I need earth. I need mud and clay and brick and all that which is coming from the earth. I cannot build it out of gold. But if I want to adorn myself with ornaments, then of course, then gold has its own value. So that part, understanding that part, each one has its own importance. We need all three of them for various reasons. If my need is for that, then that will become the most important to me. So this is the part about understand making this summer. How do you make earth and stone and gold summer equal? They can never be equal. But recognition of each one's value in your own mind, correct value. Don't give incorrect value to anything. Correct value in your mind, it means that you have made them equanimous. And then with people. So he gives a whole bunch of examples. Surun, Mitra, Udasin, Madhyastha, then Dvesh, Bandushu, friend. So there is well-wisher, friend, Madhyastha, who is a mediator. You know, generally they'll come if there is some clash going on between two people. They'll like to make peace. Vaishya, one who hates us or we hate them. Bandhu, friend, sadhu, living as per the scriptures. Papi, who is not living as per the scriptures. We must be equal to them. And what is meant by equal is in our mind, if anybody comes to us for help, we must not say, I don't like him, why should I help? Not like that. So if we can help, help. So all of them, it's not like I will do more for you because you're my friend and then I will not do as much for this one who's not my friend. If that other person needs more than your own friend and if they're asking you for help and you're capable of giving it, do so. So that is being equanimous to everybody. Another thing about this equanimous to people is we must not let anything affect us that is being told to us by other people. So generally what happens is like or dislike arises because of what we are hearing from a third party. So somebody comes to us and tells, you know, so-and-so is doing this and this, and so now we don't like. So that also should be avoided. We must make our own judgments and whatever judgment that my own judgment may be that this person is not very nice or this person is very nice, keep it to yourself. If it is good, you can talk, but if it's bad, try not to. Not to spread it, you know, oh God, my experience with that is not good, etc. And then from verse 10 onwards, Bhagwan started the actual instruction for meditation. So far, it was only preparation for meditation, which is quietening of the mind. And he's given all these various methods. First, one of the first methods was giving up the attachment to results of action, trying to lift the mind by itself, trying to be equanimous to situations, to objects, and to persons. Because being equanimous is what will give us peace. The reason we don't have peace in our mind is because we are not equanimous. We like certain things and we don't like certain things, objects, people. And that's what makes us uncomfortable. And that is uncomfortable and agitated. So those are the methods he has given. And then he says that once that is done, then now external, this thing, stay in a place of solitude. Okay. Let the yogi try constantly to keep the mind steady, remaining in solitude. So solitude, find a little corner in your house. It is better. Of course, there are group meditations which are done. And we do that just to give people a taste of what meditation is. But actual meditation always has to be done in solitude. It is not a group activity. Oh, let's do let's get together and do meditation. No, let's get together and do satsang, but not meditation. Maybe in lectures, Swamiji also does and all that. That's okay. But actually has to be done alone. Yata chit ekaki, yata chit atma, and nirashir aparigraha. Nirashir without any hope. Hope means attachment. Hope is always in the future that this will happen, that will happen. Some people think meditation, I'll see some light, I'll hear some sound. Nothing like that should be in our mind, because if it is there, we will keep on looking for that and we will not be able to concentrate on what actually we need to concentrate on. Parigraha is hoarding. So the less we hoard, the better off we are. It is a sense of freedom. Yata chit atma, here atma means mind. So yata chit atma means mind at an equal keel, at an equanimous keel, not going up and down, excited, depressed, not that. So when you're sitting in the seat of meditation, these are the requirements. Then shuchau deshe pratishthapya, a clean place. If there is a bad odor, then the reason clean means physical cleanliness, because you know there is a bad odor. If some ants are moving here, then we will get disturbed. Our mind will be distracted, right? That's why. Pratishthapya sthiram asanam atmana. So asana, I told you asana siddhi. If you can sit without movement for half an hour, so actually in meditation we say first gain asana siddhi. Patanjali Yoga Shastra says, first gain asana siddhi means you have to be able to sit in one position without moving for 30 minutes. And for that, to gain that asana siddhi, there is also ashana siddhi. Ashana means eating. So what Patanjali's Yoga Sutra say, that to gain this posture, steadiness in posture, you must actually have yukta ahar. Yukta ahar means proper food. Because if you overeat or if you undereat, asana siddhi will not come, because you've now overeaten. Now you're feeling very lazy and sleepy and, not feeling that great, overeating. You've eaten more than what you need. Or even if you undereat, then you're going to be hungry. So again, the body is going to be agitated. So for asana, it is not just sitting, but to get asana siddhi, the first prior 24 hours, the eating also has to be under control. So it's a whole lifestyle change. That is what it is. So gain this, stay in a steady, not idea is, you can't do meditation, moving like a pendulum, sitting on a swing, sitting on a rock, let me meditate, let me rock. That is the idea. No, you can't do that. You need to sit steady. You can sit on a chair. It doesn't matter. You don't have to sit cross-legged on the floor. That is not a requirement, but as long as your body remains erect and steady. Nathi chittam, nathi chailajina kushotaram. I explained to you that time also, but because people used to, there used to be insects. So they have a bed of grass, and then on top they would keep a tiger skin or a deer skin. And the deer skin keeps all the insects away. And then on top of that, they would put a cotton cloth. And the reason for the cotton cloth was that if you sweat, then that sweat should not touch that deer skin or the tiger skin, whatever animal skin there is. So, and the bed of grass is for softness. So that was the thing in the past. But right now we have carpet, so we can very easily sit on the carpet and we don't have to worry about insects coming and crawling in the house and all that. So we don't have to. But in those days, that was the instruction. The idea is the place has to be clean. It has to be solitary, and it should not make your body uncomfortable. So sit in a comfortable position. Okay, that is the idea. Then he says, tatra ekagram manaha. So then make the mind single pointed, because that is the whole idea of meditation, is to reduce the thoughts in the mind. Whichever way that you choose to do, you can observe the thoughts. Gurudev has said like a parade. The other one of the reasons, and it, we'll be talking about it today, is to reduce thoughts is to devalue the objects. Because a thought comes in my mind because I have put value on that object. And so that's when the, all the thoughts start coming. So if I remove that value, if I reduce that value that I have put into the object or the person, I will not think about it so much. Especially in the seat of meditation, we must tell our mind that this is my time to meditate and I really do not want to be thinking of any other thoughts. And the purpose of is Atma Vishuddhaya, he said, it is for the purification of the intellect. So purified mind, we need a purified. So less thoughts, less agitations, the ability to concentrate, all these come to a pure mind. When we say what do you mean by a pure mind? So there, it'll have the ability to concentrate on one topic. It'll have the ability to stay on that topic for a while. There will not be any thought disturbances, that sort of thing. Then in 13, he said, Samam Kaya Shiro Grivam. This is also from Patanjali Yoga Shastra. He says, the neck, the head, the neck and the spine should be in one straight line. That's why not bending forward, bending back, leaning back. You know, like this is not a meditation. If I am leaning back, this is not meditation posture. This is meditation posture. Because if I'm leaning back, it's not in a straight line. When I sit up straight, then that is a meditation posture. And then Samprekshanasikagram Swam Dishaschan Avalokayan. So concentrate on the tip of, not like you become cross-eyed and look, but basically close your eyes and then concentrate on this spot. And then you have to lose awareness of space. The awareness of space always comes. What it means is space is not going anywhere. Awareness of space comes because of identification with the body. As long as I keep thinking I'm the body, the awareness of space will be there because the body is in space. So the idea of giving up awareness of space is transcend the body. So when the body is very comfortably seated, that's why we say half an hour practice. So when it's comfortably seated, then your thoughts, your mind will not go to the body. Oh, here it is hurting. That foot went to sleep. Those things should not happen. You should sit such that, you know, there should be no pain in the knees. Nothing like that. That's when you will transcend the body. Then Prashant Atma Vigata Bihi Brahmachari Vrate Stitaha. So making the mind serene minded. Vigata Bihi, Vigata without Bhi, fear. Brahmachari Vrate Stitaha. So firm in the vow of Brahmacharya. I told you Brahmacharya is not just celibacy from sex, but control of all the senses. And that's why I told you for asana siddhi, you need asana siddhi. Asana siddhi is eating. So control on the eating. So all these control on talking, too much talking, it disturbs the mind. Actually, that's what I've been known, because when I've now moved it into my condo, as you can see, and there were a lot of things to be done. And so there's few things which are not, which have to be fixed by the developer. So it's not a perfect situation. So there's been so much going on in my mind that even for me to like sit and study for a few days, it just wasn't possible. Just couple of days now, things are settling down a little bit. You can't see my, it's pretty messy around me. It's good the camera doesn't show you the whole thing because I still have to organize my books. You can see part of my bookshelf and part of my altar here, but there's still a lot of organization to be done. And that's what I found, that I could not really concentrate on reading or anything. So if I can't even concentrate on reading when the mind is so agitated, what about meditation? There's no way that the mind, so the mind has to be, you know, really quiet. And after a long time today, I was able to like sit and, you know, read. So that's what. Then mana sayama machito yukta asita matpara. So the mind has to be fixed in me, considering me as the supreme. That's what it's yukta asita mat paraha, mat me as the supreme being. You must understand that. And then you must fix the mind over there. That is not just fix the mind anywhere or me and, you know, not like that. So the mind has to be fixed in me. Yunjan Nevam Sadatmanam Yogi Niyata Manasa Shantim Nirvana Parama Mat Samsthamad Adhikachati. So when that is done, when you consider me to be the supreme, and when you put that mind in me, means not like you put a rasgulla in a katori, it's not like that, but when the mind is only thinking about the Lord, about the Supreme Self, then Shantim Nirvana Paramam, there will be extreme peace. Because why? Because I am of the nature of peace, the Lord. The Lord is of the nature of peace. So when you hook up with the Lord, when you join with the Lord, there will be nothing but peace. Okay, Yunjan Neva Sadatmanam. Yuj again, it's coming. So, and then 16. Okay, so then from 16 began the secondary rules. These were all the primary rules. First, the externalities, and then what to do in the seat of meditation was told. And now for 16 and 17, they give us the secondary rules. So he says, yoga is not possible for him who eats too much. I already explained to you that if I eat too much, I'm going to be sleepy. If I don't eat enough, I'm going to be hungry. All these things, the reason this is being said is that the mind then goes there. If I go, then I'm belching, then I'm, you know, I feel uncomfortable, I can't sit, I will feel sleepy if I've overeaten. Then that way meditation can't be done. And I also told you that Patanjali Yoga Sutra, they say that half of the stomach should be filled with food, one-fourth water and one-fourth air. Now, half means it's a feeling. You know, actually what they say is when you eat, when you have your meals, if somebody offers you something afterwards, you should be able to eat that. Which means that you must not eat full to the brim anytime. You must always have some space in the stomach. And then nurture ati swapna shilasya jagrato naiva charjuna. So ati swapna here means deep sleep, not dreaming. Dreaming also can take daydreaming, too much day. That is sankalpa again, you're daydreaming and projecting in the future. But too much sleeping or keeping awake all night. I'm going to keep awake all night. No. And sleep, everybody has their own thresholds. So if you can do with 6 hours sleep, 6 to 8 is generally recommended. If you can do with 6 hours sleep, fine. Some people need 8 hours to function properly. Then take 8 hours sleep, take proper rest, take proper food. And food also, sattvic food is recommended. When we reach chapter 16 someday, then it will tell us what sattvic food is. Sattvic food is that which will make you feel fresh. Salads, if I were to give you an example, salads, fruit juice, all those things are sattvic. Rajasic is that which will spicy, masala, you know, too much masala, too much spicy food, that becomes rajasic. And tamasic is wine and liquor and all those kinds of things would be tamasic. So they will make you very, your brain will not function properly. When you eat tamasic food, the brain will not function very properly. So it is recommended that we eat sattvic food if we are interested in doing meditation. And then he goes on to say, yukta ahara vihara, and then yukta cheshtasya karmasu. So yukta ahara, not just food, but intake. Ahar means intake. So intake is through the 5 sense organs. So the idea is that it should be yukta, means not excessive watching TV, excessive reading, excessive movie watching, excessive listening to music. Nothing should exceed a certain limit. You listen to music, you watch movies, that is all okay, but yukta, it should be yukta, appropriate. So yeah, for recreation, a little bit of music, a little bit of this thing, it's okay, partying, socializing, but a little bit, not in excess. And if you're in the practice of meditating in the morning, then see, or even class. For me, I have class Saturday, Sunday morning. So Saturday night, I tend not to stay late even if I go out. I'm like, no, I've got class tomorrow. So that sort of discipline has to come in, that I need to wake up at a certain time and I need to be home. So that is what is yukta ahara. And vihara is rest, recreation. Ahar is intake through all the senses. Vihar is recreation. So even when you're partying, you appropriate only that much. Whatever is needed, you do. You talk, but not excessive talking anything. And then yukta cheshta. Cheshta here means work. So you do work, but don't again do excessive work where it is not required. Yukta swapna avabodhasya. Swapna is sleep. Avabodh is waking. So yukta again. So which means proper sleep, like I said, not excessive sleep and not excessive waking. Like whole night you will have a, you know, jagran, like wake, awake, having parting, and then in the morning you want to sit and meditate. That is not going to be possible. Yogo bhavati dukkha is coming from han han dhatu, to kill, and dukkha, so it will kill the sorrow. Means the person will not have any sorrows. And that is where I think we had stopped last time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where my bookmark is. So now we are going to go, because I said that now the slight change in topic. We are now going into, Bhagwan is now going into Savikalpa and Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That is what, where this chapter is now going, moving forward. Okay. Yada viniyatam chittam atmanevavatishtate nispraha sarva kamebhyah yukta ityuchate tada. When the perfectly controlled mind rests in the self only, free from longing for all objects of desires, then it is said that he is united, yuktaha. We have done the preparation for the meditation, and Bhagwan has also given us the secondary rules. Now the yogi is sitting in the seat of meditation. Then what happens? Now all asana siddhi is done, ashansi, all that is done, mind is quietened. So the verse begins with yada and ends with tada. Yada means when and tada means then. So when this happens, then that is the import of this whole verse. So when what? Yada when what? Vinyatam chittam atmana eva avatishtate. That is how the line is to be broken in prose. So vinyatam chittam. Chittam here is a mind. Okay. It's not memory or anything. Chittam is mind. Vinyatam. Niyatam is a controlled mind. See, there's a word niyama, rule, right? And niyatam karma is also there. Niyatam means ordained karma. Ordained karma means it's a discipline that this karma is to be done. So it is, and discipline is control, right? When I say that I'm disciplined, I'm going to get up, there has to be a control that I'm going to get up at this time, do this, etc. So this visheshena niyatam, so very well controlled. That is the meaning of that word. When this very well controlled mind. Now, what is the meaning of this very well controlled mind, and how do I very well control the mind? So there are two aspects to this very well controlled mind. How do we define a very well controlled mind? Is that the mind must be capable of staying in one topic for any number of time. Like as long as I want the mind to stay on this particular topic, it will stay there. That is a controlled mind, because then the mind is in my control. Generally what is happening is we are under the control of the mind. The mind says this, the mind goes here, the mind goes there. So when that mind is able to focus, is able to concentrate on one particular topic, on one particular thought, on one particular subject, it is said to be well controlled. Now, when will the mind be able to stay on a particular topic is when the mind loves that topic. If I don't like something and I'm asked to think about it, maybe I might think about it for a while, but do you think that constantly I will see? That's why there are people who constantly talk about their grandchildren. Constantly they do, right? Why? Why is their mind fixated on the grandchildren? So that fixation is there, but the other thing is that topic is topic of love for them. So this well control has these two aspects. So one thing is that I have to be able to keep the mind on that topic. And already Bhagwan has given the topic. What topic? Mat para and mat sthanam. In the previous verses, he in the seat of meditation, the topic that the mind should remain on is him and considering him as supreme. And that will be possible when we love him. Only if we love the Lord, then our mind will stay there. So that is one meaning of this vinyatam chittam. Okay, that is the two aspects of them. Now, how will I control the mind? What is the mind? Mind is nothing but a movement in consciousness. Now, what he's saying is vinyatam chittam atmane eva avatishtate. So when this well-controlled mind will stay in the in me, in Atma. Here Atma means the pure self. So it will stay steady in me. This must not be understood as there is something known as mind and then there is something self over here and that mind is now going into the self. Not like that. He says that the mind will stay in Atma. What it is mind is a movement in consciousness. Mind and consciousness are one and the same. Okay, a movement in consciousness, that is what is called as mind. Consciousness, mind, they're one and the same. Why are there two words? When the consciousness, there is a movement. What is that movement? Thought. Vritti or thought is what is the movement in consciousness. And when that thought process is happening, that same consciousness is called as mind. So if I want to put the mind in consciousness or back in consciousness, not to put it there, it is there only, what I have to do is remove the thoughts. Understood? So that movement has to be stopped. That's all I do. I don't need to take my mind and then put it in the self somewhere. That is not the idea. That is not the idea. Understand that the mind and consciousness are one and the same. Consciousness in motion is mind. So if I stop that motion, that mind and consciousness will have no difference. There will be no difference. Now, question is, a well-controlled mind, that's why it can remain on one topic, and the topic we have already said it has to be pure self. Okay, so how will I control for, like at our level, the first thing is the thought. What is thought? Thought is generated, it's a relationship between subject and object. Right? In a thought, there is always a subject and there is always an object. Because that's why I say, I'm looking at the computer or I'm drinking water or the phone is ringing or this is my phone. So there always is that I component, which is the subject component, and there is an object component. I am happy. So happy is an object and I is the subject. So in this subject-object relationship, what is happening? A thought formation is happening. A movement is happening. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm jealous. I like someone. I don't like someone. I have a computer. I don't have a computer. Whatever. So if I were to suspend thought, I have to break this relationship. The subject-object relationship has to be broken. Now, if I have to break the subject-object relationship, subject is not going anywhere. You cannot do anything to the subject. The subject is I. What can you do? You cannot destroy yourself. So subject cannot be touched, which means what? If the relationship has to be broken, the object has to be touched. And what do we mean by touching the object? We have to destroy the object. Now, a physical destruction of the objects is not possible. This is not the idea when we say we have to destroy the thought. We have to devalue it. That means as good as. The object may be there, but if I'm not thinking about that object, then what good is that object anyways? You understand? So what has to happen is a devaluation, an overall devaluation, a zero discount policy to be given to all objects. And that's what he talked about in those three verses, is that heat and cold, no value. Whether heat, same value. Cold, same value. Stone, earth and gold, same value. Nothing, no extra excitement for one, less excitement for the other. Nothing, same. And the third was the people. So the people around you. So that is what he talked about. That when we are able to do that physically, then in the seat of meditation, we will be able to break this subject-object relationship. This subject-object dichotomy has to be broken. If the dichotomy has to be broken, one thing, there is one subject, one object, one of these two has to go. Subject cannot go anywhere. Because the subject is meditating, subject cannot go anywhere, the object has to go. Okay, physically the object is not going anywhere. We are not asking for the object to go physically, because already in the beginning of the chapter he said that in your mind, if you cannot give up, then you're not a sannyasi. What is renunciation? In the mind, the thoughts have to be given up. So to give up the thought, devalue the object. That is the thing. So what happens is, when that subject-object dichotomy is given up, there is only one thing. There is only subject. That means there will be no movement. Once there is no movement, the mind atmani eva avatishtati. Then this vinyatam chittam, this well-controlled mind, will stay in the atma. Stay means it is already in the atma. We cannot recognize it because of the thought disturbances. So when the thought disturbances are given up, when the thought disturbances are calmed down, the mind will rest in the atma. Atmani eva avatishtate. Now, this is one way, and Bhagwan himself gives us the answer as well. So he says, how to do this? How to keep the mind in consciousness, or how to understand that the mind only is conscious? He says, become nisprahaha sarva kamebhyaha. These are the two methods he is giving. So spraha is a longing for something which has been experienced. And kama, which is desire. Desire is a longing for something which I have not experienced. So I have not experienced a certain country, or I have not eaten a certain food, or I have not done something, or I don't have something. Then, and I want it, that is a desire. But once I have it, wanting more of it, once I experience it, trying to experience it again, that becomes spraha. Between the two, spraha is easier to give up. Practical tip I'm telling you, because desires, we have a lot of desires. The reason I thought of this was, in the summer I went to Japan, I climbed Mount Fuji. When I came back, one of my friends was asking me, she says, will you do it again? And this time I went alone. So it wasn't such a very great experience. But anyway, I climbed. And she said, if you have company, will you do it again? And I said, no. So I have no spraha for it. I had a desire. That's the reason that I climbed. That's the reason that I went to Japan. So the desire, the karma was there, which is something that I had not done before. But now at least give up the spraha. So that is the first step. Spraha is first step. So that longing to enjoy something which that's the reason where people go to a party and they say, when is the next party? That is spraha. Go to the party. We are not telling you not to enjoy, but don't ask when is the next party. If the next party is to come to you, it will come. So why are you worried about it? Okay, this is the two methods Bhagwan is giving. He's saying give up all desires that already he has told us, because that is what is agitating the mind, is the desires. Okay, and then give up spraha, the longing for those, okay, for something that has been experienced. Then yukta iti uchate tada. Then I told you tada. So when the well-controlled mind, and I told you the two aspects of the well-controlled mind, is that the mind should be able to remain on one topic for a long period of time. And when will it remain on that topic? Is when it loves that topic. Then this atmani eva avatishti, it will stay in consciousness. What does that mean? Mind itself is not like the mind is somewhere else and consciousness somewhere else, and we're putting this mind into that consciousness. Nothing like that. Mind and consciousness is the same. Movement in consciousness is mind. Movement in consciousness is thought. Thought is a subject-object relationship. It's caused by a subject-object relationship, a dichotomy. That dichotomy has to be given up. We cannot give up the subject. We need to give up the object. Physical giving up of objects is not possible, not recommended either. What is to be given up is the value which we have put on it. That's why that Samar Loshtashma Kanchana was given the verse already. Understand the value of each object and that much importance you give it. They are not saying food has its own importance, shelter has its own importance. There was a time when I was totally like, I actually didn't have a home. And of course, home became very important to me at that time, right? So it is important, but not to that extent either. Understand its value, and that way you try and devalue. And with, as per Bhagwan, he says, Praha, give up the longing, give up the desires. Okay, desires also we will give up only when we devalue. The reason we desire anything is because it has value for us. That's why we desire it. So the only thing that is worth desiring is Paramatma, is the pure consciousness. That part has to be understood. Once we understand that firmly, very well, we get established in that thought, then all these other longings will be cut off. That's why Gurudev has given attach and detach. So he says, once you attach to the higher, the lower desires will fall off. And between spraha and kama, spraha is easier to give up. At least we can try. Like literally at the physical level, just try that. You go for a party, don't ask when somebody gives you some object. Don't say, oh, when will I get the name? When will I get a better sari? When will I get a better? At least don't ask. Okay? So that is what it is. Let's go to 19. We will at least introduce the thing, and then if anybody has any questions. Yatha dipo nivatastho. Yatha dipo nivatastho. Nengate sopama smrita. Yogino yata chittasya. Yunjato yoga matmanaha. As a lamp placed in a windless place does not flicker is a simile used to describe the yogi of controlled mind practicing yoga in the self or absorbed in the self, in the yoga of the self. So here, Bhagwan is giving us a simile, and the simile is of a deepa, a lamp, which is placed in a windless place. Now, if you take an oil lamp, there is a receptacle, it has a receptacle, and in that there is oil, and in that oil is placed a wick, and then the wick is lit, and that's how the flame is there. Okay, so the receptacle is the mind of the yogi, or it is our mind. Okay, that is the receptacle. The oil is the love for that topic, but here meditation topic is going on. So we say the oil is the love for the Lord, okay, or our Ishta Devata. See, in a lamp, the more viscous, the more there is more, if there is more viscosity to that oil, the wick will burn more. So if there is more love for the Lord, the thoughts will be with him more, right? I told you, the topic, if it is a topic of my liking, then my mind will stay on that topic for a longer period of time. So that is what it is. The wick is the intellect and the match is the knowledge. That is the comparison. Okay, so the receptacle is the mind. The oil is the love. The wick is the intellect, and the match, the light, actual light, match stick is the knowledge. Now, this the reason that it is being compared, the mind is being compared to the lamp, is because the lamp flickers when it is kept in a windy place, as well as the mind flickers when it is full of desires. So when there are winds of desires that are gushing through the mind will flicker like the flame which will flicker in an actual wind. That's why it is being compared to the lamp with the oil. Now, if you keep that in a windless place, and I remember in Sandeepani when we were studying, because the fans used to be on all the time there because heat in Bombay, every lamp had this glass casing. So they'd light the lamp with the oil and then they would put a glass casing around it. So that would protect it from the fan, and then it would protect, and then the flame would burn very evenly. Okay. Also, the other thing is that please remember that even though it seems like it is the same flame, it is not. Every moment, there is a different piece of wick that is burning and a different drop of oil which is burning in the lamp. Remember that. we think that it is the same wick and the same flame, but if you really look at it, the wick is constantly burning, right? It reduces. So every moment that you're seeing the flame, it is a different piece of wick and it's a different drop of oil, because that drop in the previous moment has burnt off and gone. So this is how the thoughts are too. That's why also it is compared, that every time there is a different thought that is coming up. Okay. And the desires, the winds are the desires. And that is what will always, the mind will keep flickering because of the desires. And therefore, what he's saying is the mind of a yogi is like a flame which is kept in a windless place. So which means that it does not flicker. The mind of a yogi does not flicker. And who is a yogi? Who has already Vinayatam Chittam in the previous verse, who has a very well controlled mind, and a well controlled mind will not flicker. In the initial stages, see what the way we are right now is, I think that I am the thought right now, right? When an angry thought comes in my mind, I say I'm angry. I say I'm happy, I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm whatever, right? Jealous, angry, whatever. So the first stage is that I think that I am the thought. What we have to graduate to as seekers is to understand and get well established in the principle that I am not the thought, I am a witness of the thought. And when we get established in that knowledge, because now that is the knowledge that we are listening to, we must try and practice it. So then what happens is we become the observer of the thought rather than the thought itself. Right now, I am the thought itself. I am angry. Next step is anger is rising in me. I am observing this anger which is rising in me. All right. How do we reach this state of the yogi? That is what I'm telling you. Practical. Like this is, yeah, that is the yogi's mind. What about my mind? My mind is constantly flickering. Then as you observe the thought, and as Ramana Maharshi has said in Upadesh Sar, that when you start questioning who is the one that is angry, who is the one that is jealous, who is the one who is happy, who is the one who is sad, what will happen is that thought will dissolve. It actually dissolves. Try it. But to try that, you have to immediately come to the conclusion that I am not the thought. The thought is rising in me. I am separate from the thought. It's extremely difficult to reach that stage. It is not that easy, but with practice and with knowledge, we can come to that stage. So when you come to a stage of observing the thought, then those thoughts will fade. The next step after that is to control what thought is going through your mind. So what the yogi is, he has reached a stage where he says, now I'm only going to think of the Lord. And he does not allow. That is the well-controlled mind. A mind which listens to you. Understand that you are not the mind. Because unless we understand that, we will never understand this principle. How I can tell is me only. No, my mind, me only. I am only the mind. No. You're not the mind. That is the reason you can tell the mind that this is not the time for X thought. I need a Y thought to be concentrating on. And that becomes a Vinayatam Chittam. And when that happens, when I have control over what thought I'm going to think at what time, then in the seat of meditation, I command the mind that now I'm only going to think of the Lord. And when that happens, the mind becomes flickerless. Because the mind has now been tamed and controlled and told that this is the only thought that should be there. It will not waver then. Right? When the mind is well controlled, it will not waver. And that is, this yogi has achieved that state. And therefore, Bhagwan says, compares his state of mind to this flame which is in a windless place, which does not flicker. That is what is meant by the mind not. Right now, our mind is totally flickering. Even as I'm talking, even as you're listening, there's other thoughts going through the mind. So right now it is like that. And to reach that stage, these are the steps. First is I am the thought. then no, I'm not the thought. I'm something different from the thought. I'm an observer of the thought. I'm a witness of the thought. And then this is the thought that I want to entertain at this time right now. So I'm not going to entertain any other thought. And that will take you to that flickerless state. Okay, so we'll stop here today. Next time we'll start with verse 20. Are there any questions? No questions? Okay. So we will close now and we will meet next Monday. Okay.